Welcome to the Global Marketing Show, the podcast for all things international business. I'm your host, Wendy Pease, president of Rapport International and a translation expert. Come along with me today as we talk to an expert in the global marketing world about facing their biggest fears, hearing about mistakes they made or saw, discussing best practices, and sharing fun travel language and culture stories. Hi, thanks for joining the Global Marketing Podcast. Today, we welcome Elliot Holloway, who has quite a background in international marketing. And so I'm looking forward to hearing lots of his stories. So welcome, Elliot.
How you doing, Wendy? I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invite.
Well, I'm thrilled. I'm really looking forward to hearing more in depth about some of the stories you have to share. Yeah. So he is currently a senior education content developer at Align, which does the Invisalign. I'm sure a lot of people have heard of that, but we'll get into that more. You're also a freelance consultant on marketing, design, and branding. Mm-hmm. And you were a marketing creative director for Cheetah Digital and a brand manager at ABB. And you worked at SunTech Medical in marketing communications and as creative director. You have an MBA from East Carolina University and a bachelor's in graphic design from North Carolina State University. So
yes. Go Pack.
I am very, very excited. All right. So, I gave you a heads up on this. So
yes.
I'm so curious to know, what's your favorite foreign word?
When I saw the question, it was immediate, honestly, what I came to, and the word is abuela, Spanish for grandmother. And, you know, this has got nothing to do with, you know, I've got three youngish boys, so it's got nothing to do with Coco and having seen that thousands of times at this point. But as an undergrad in graphic design, my professors always talked about the definitions of words and the two definitions, whether you have the connotative definition or the word just dropped right out of my brain, the denotative definition of that, of the word. So what it actually means and what it evokes. And for me,
run those words by me again. I've never heard that talked about before. So there's the connotative.
Yes. Connotative, which is what it evokes, and denotative is what that's the textbook definition of it. Abuela is Spanish for grandmother. But the way that word rolls off my tongue and all of the emotions, not only, you know, my own grandmother, who's not Spanish, but the way that word makes me feel, I just love it. It makes me feel warm. It makes me feel like I'm, you know, sitting by a fire, with my grandmother. Abuela.
That's so special, right? Because it is a positive connotative and denotative word. Mm-hmm. I love it. And I love that it's the Spanish. It's not something you'd use, but
no.
Have you brought it into your family at all?
No, we haven't. No, no, far from. No, my mom is Grammy, and to my kids, and my wife's mom is grandmom. So no, abuela, no, unfortunately, no. So
that's so funny. When I was a kid growing up, my grandmothers were Grammy and Grandma.
Oh, nice. So, nice.
Yeah. But my mom is actually Mima to my kids.
Okay. And, yeah. So then my mother, I am an only child. My wife has got 7 siblings. Her mom is called multiple different things by different.
Oh, no people. Way. They didn't pick the same one. I figured it was grandchild. Yeah. No, wow.
Our three are the last grandchildren. There's she's Meemaw to a couple. I think she's grandmom to ours. I think she's grandma to a few others. So yeah, she's all over the place. Same thing with Jim, my father-in-law. So.
Oh, that's hysterical. Well, she gets, and then she's got to think about how to sign things for who she's giving it to. And
correct.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Yeah. I've never thought about that. I'll have to start asking other people whether they have the same name for a grandparent.
Yeah.
All right. So tell me, what was your first exposure to another language or culture?
10th grade. 10th grade Spanish class. Miss Witter. I sat in her class for 2 years. And she was fantastic. Fantastic Spanish teacher. That was the first exposure from boots on the ground, being in another country. I don't know, but the place that I've spent the most time is Dusseldorf in Germany. So I've spent the most time there love that place. So.
Wow. Okay. So when did you, you're working at Invisalign now.
Right.
In Align right now, who does the Invisalign product. So tell me a little bit about what you do there.
Sure. So, titles are always interesting things that, they sometimes are dead on exactly what it is that you do. And sometimes they are just words on a piece of paper. Luckily mine is the former, says what I do. So I help create educational content for dentists and orthodontists to then deliver to other dentists and orthodontists to help them understand Invisalign and how to do it, and whether it's the specifics of tooth movement or whether it's how to market, how to talk to customers about Invisalign and the products that Align has. So, because it's not just the Invisalign product, there is also a mouth scanner that we have called the iTero. That's a pretty fantastic piece of equipment. So.
Okay, so I do know what Invisalign is because my dental hygienist had talked to me about getting it. So it really is like adult braces.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic and fascinating to see. If I'm building content, a lot of it's PowerPoint content. So there are a lot of before and afters, and to see what people's teeth look like before and then after in a much shorter span of time than, braces. It's crazy to see. It's crazy to see what the product can do.
Yeah. All right. And so right now you're not translating much for Invisalign because you're mostly in the U.S.
Correct. Correct. We do a little bit. We do a little bit with our counterparts up in Canada. Mm-hmm. So some of the content that we create goes there, and that team focuses on the translating that content for that specific market. So it's really only one or two of our courses that happens with currently. So.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any plans to go international in other places?
No, not currently. Just in general, as far as life or specific to Align.
Specific to Align.
Okay, all right.
Had a very big background, so I want to get into that. I think it's wasted talent if your company is not tapping into you to take them global.
No. I mean, Align is a huge organization. They've got tons of people that work on that stuff. That are quite amazing. So not only our Canadian market, but also all over the world, whether it be South America, Europe, Asia, all of those places. It's one of the most talented organizations that I've ever worked in before. That's just looking at the organization, seeing where people have come from, seeing actually what they're doing right now. It's a great place. It's a great place to work.
Wait. So run that by me again. So sure. Your Invisalign or Align only sells in the U.S. and Canada?
No. So this is a global company. So there are, there's presence all over the world, truthfully. South America, Asia, and all of those markets. I can't speak specifically to all of that because I'm not in all of those conversations, but specific to those other markets, things are growing. Things are moving significantly in those places. So
how's the company set up to do marketing across the different countries? Are they all separate?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So there are different marketing groups for specific countries, and a lot of organizations set things up. From my understanding, set things up this way, where you have a global team that you know is creating content that is doing marketing work. So in addition to that, there's a singular brand team that you know serves similar purpose that is working globally, and then there are different marketing teams. You know, nested throughout other countries. From a model perspective, I think that makes sense and it works really well, because not only do you have centralized messaging coming from, you know, a global stage, but then you have, and this I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit, where you have teams, marketing teams and other teams that are working in that market, that are specific to that market, that know what that market needs and can create content specific to that place.
Okay, so you're creating content for education courses, but there's a mm-hmm. whole separate global marketing team.
Yes.
That creates the global marketing message.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
that is a global message, but then mm-hmm. they push it out to the marketing teams who do it. So if they have, do they have a marketing team in Spain and one in South America?
South America, I believe. I'm not sure about Spain, actually. I'm not sure about Spain. But yes, South America.
Okay, that would then handle the whole, like all the Spanish speakers in that area.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's a very interesting, it's a cool model. It's a cool model.
Yeah, I've seen that, and I've seen some problems that teams run into. Mm-hmm. And I've also seen where it's done out of corporate.
Yes.
And what they run into. So so it's interesting. So how's this? Tell me about your company, why you think it's a cool model and why it works there.
For me, from a global perspective, from a global marketing perspective, and we can, I'm sure we will talk a little bit about content from a translation perspective, but it is, for me in my career, it is incredibly important to create, for lack of a better term, genuine experiences. And in order to do that, you can't take your Americanized box of stuff, pick it up and port it to another country without there being some level of customization at the sort of minimal to, you know, on the other end of that, again, creating those genuine experiences that speak specifically to people in that country. You want people, just like you want people that are, you know, if your company is based out of the US, and when they pick up your stuff, when they pick up your content, when they read your blog post, they are reading it from the standpoint of it hitting things that Americans know and understand. That may not necessarily work in Spain. That may not necessarily work in France. So having people in groups on the ground that are able to craft content specific to that country, specific to that region, is going to create, again, those genuine experiences that are going to become inclusive for people in that region.
Okay. And so, sorry, you mentioned content and translation, and we'll get yes. into that more. Do you want to, yeah. Do you have more to say on that? Because you kind of touched on it with what you just said.
No, we can come back to that, or there's nothing in addition to what I was just talking about that I want to add to that, as it were. So.
Okay. Yeah. And then when you're talking about the level of customization and really connecting, do you think there's a difference between B2C and B2B products?
Possibly, yes. From a B2B perspective, at least in my experience, there can be more of a focus on the stuff that's in the box, the materials that you need to make the widget work, whether it's the quick start guide, whether it's the all of that stuff that comes in the box. So some of that stuff is, that doesn't necessarily need to be doesn't necessarily need to have the same level of customization that something like a B2C company would need. Because with a B2C company, there are going to be, and this is, can happen with a B2B company as well, but there are going to be very specific messages that need to be given to the audience. And you want to make sure that you have that, that there are no, what was the example from the 70s with, I believe it was Ford with Pinto, in terms of what that word meant in other countries. There, yeah, you don't want problems like that to arise, especially in our 24/7 news cycle, how everything is so completely connected. And, you know, someone in with a Twitter account can be engaged with your CEO in seconds if they desire to. So,
right.
But again, that difference between B2C and B2B, making sure that the stuff again in the box is translated and folks can understand it. But at that B2C level, really being able to dig down into the brand and say, these are the things that we're trying to evoke. These are the thoughts and the feelings that we're trying to evoke with our stuff, with our content. How do we make that message work somewhere else?
Right. Right. And so have you seen any differences? And this is a little bit out of your area with Invisalign, yeah. But have you seen any differences in how they would do the messaging in local markets?
I haven't, honestly. And I'm sorry for not being able to speak to that specifically, but no, I haven't. But the I am curious to see a little bit more about that in terms of that product is, and I'm sure we'll loop back around to SunTech places. We'll loop back around to that, but the product is has been in the past, not nearly as much as it has been, but is very much a challenger brand in terms of wires and brackets. That's how you have moved teeth for a very, very long time. And to have something new at this point, 20 years old, to come in and disrupt that, how was that positioned again in a completely different culture, a different country? I think I've been at Align for about a year. I am curious to see how that works.
Right. Because I mean, I certainly see it if you're selling sporting equipment. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think I've talked about this before, if you've got soccer balls, who you're going to put as your face,
right?
You know, to represent that is going to be extremely different with colors and everything and types of terminology. But I would imagine something that people get to straighten their teeth, mm-hmm. you want to look better, you want to be healthier, you want to, mm-hmm. you know, I would think the messages were more similar. So.
Yeah.
I was just kind of curious. We'll have to have you back on and dig into that.
Yeah.
You did mention SunTech, and I wanted mm-hmm. to get into that because this was your first company really doing international business, right?
It was, yes.
Tell me more about how you started there, what you were doing.
My interview at SunTech, and I'll make this story short, but my interview at SunTech was on a Thursday. I had my first child on a Tuesday.
The Tuesday before or after?
Yeah, Tuesday before. So I had to call and reschedule that interview for the following week. But
I am so glad to hear that. I can't imagine showing up 2 days later and
probably not having slept. I blank a lot of that out at this point, but SunTech was and is a blood pressure measurement device and technology company. So many of the larger name organizations that, you know, you go to the doctor and you have your blood pressure taken with a device of some sort, an automated device. In a lot of cases, SunTech is providing that technology on the back end, like actually in the device, the board that's doing that. So they also have at that point two finished goods that were incredibly popular that everyone knew the name of, but not enough people knew the name of SunTech. So I was brought in right as they were, they brought in a new CMO. They were trying to rectify that situation. Like, people know what this Oscar 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure monitor does, and they know what this Tango stress exercise monitor does, but who is SunTech Medical? So.
Okay, so you were brought in to help gain visibility on the name, and then, so what was your first assignment?
First assignment was, there were a number of things, but I think the first big assignment was to help help launch at the creative and the marketing level, marketing communications level, to help launch one of their new devices. And it was a device that was intended to speak more to family practitioners, general practitioners, as opposed to specialized cardiologists and things like that, like the two products that I mentioned before. So that product was a product called 247. I believe they still have that product in their portfolio. I'm not sure, but the seeing that come together and helping push that out to market was you know, for lack of a better term, pretty cool. I was fresh out of business school, and being able to really see both the business side of things as well as the design and creative side of things and how those married together was fascinating. And again, also helping to lead some of those efforts was pretty gratifying.
Now, were you told launch it in the US or launch it globally?
It was launched specific to the US. There was a global launch later on, but not right out of the gate.
Okay. So what led up to the global launch?
I think what led up largely to the global launch was at some point within my early tenure there, SunTech decided to, I think companies can do one of two things. Like, you can look at a separate market. You can look at a separate market as a place for you to create your products for you that are then brought into the state. So you can look at that as a place where we are going to put down roots, and we are going to have people that work for our company that are part of our family. And we're going to have people, we're going to have sales folks on boots on the ground, all of that kind of stuff there. And that's what SunTech elected to do. So building out there, wanting to build out in the in China specifically, but largely as well in the on the Asian continent. That's what led to that 247 launch, but also launches for some of their other products really into that Asian market. So.
Okay, so they say, all right, you're going to launch this product over there. How did you go about? What was the first thing you guys did? China, so, it's huge. Where do you start?
Right. So where we started was, and there will be some overlap here between the 247, but also some of the other products as well. Largely where we started was with our sales guys that were there. They were folks from that region. They were native speakers. They looked like the people that they were talking to every day. So starting with those folks, what is it about this product that will be attractive, to this market? And we have all of these things. Like, we've got this quick start guide, we've got this manual, we have all of these pieces and parts. We describe things this way. How does that work here? How does that work here? And when we started to have those conversations with those with most of those folks, what came back to us, at that point we had already largely redesigned the look and the feel of the company. My team and I were responsible for that. And when we did that, that new look and feel was largely, it was pretty open. Lots of blues, but lots of white. So medical device company.
Right.
So those worked fine. Those worked well in that country. But then that gave us enough room to be able to say, how does language, how does typography need to fit onto these materials? And things were open enough that we were able to accommodate different languages for those regions. So.
Oh, because you left enough white space in your design, so when you translate it, the expansion could still fit in. That's a key thing.
Yeah, it is.
Happened to have to design it that way, or did you have any inkling about it?
There was a little bit of both. No, that was not top of mind by any means, but what I did want, the previous, not speaking ill of anybody, I do think part of the reason I got that job at SunTech is I was asked about their current creative, and I gave my, as a designer, I gave my specific thoughts and opinions, and they happened to line up with the new CMO. He was not a fan of that look and feel, so it's like, yeah, come on in.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. Really wanted to move away from, was a lot of blue, like a lot of blue and minimal amounts of white. So the page was full, and having areas for stuff to breathe was important for me. Yeah. Particularly, again, given that it was a medical device company, I wanted that pristine feel to come across in the materials, and doing, using that as the, that's how we moved forward. It did allow for translated content to fit into that framework very easily.
Ah, that's so great. That's where you really go, ooh, thank goodness I left that space in, because we teach about that a lot and run into problems with having to reformat. All right, so let's go back to the sales guys. Mm-hmm. So you started there of asking, you know, how that'll work.
Yeah.
So you went out, somebody from your company went out and said, we're going to hire. How did they do that?
So
it's hard enough to hire here in the United States.
So hire the sales guys, or hire the folks that were going to be helping us do some of these things in China. You're talking about the sales guys, right?
Right, because the first thing you did was to go in and hire salespeople so they could work with you. So how
there was. I think part of that had to do with, there was a presence, a smaller presence in China that SunTech had already. So there were already people there that were sort of starting that process. There was a long-term distributor in Japan that SunTech had worked with for, SunTech, I think, was established in 1984. So they've been around for a long time. So having that person in Japan, and then, you know, having some sales managers and distributors in and around China, that really helped sort of centralize things at SMC, SunTech Medical China.
And were the sales reps bilingual? Or did you have
to interpret them? Yeah, for the most part. Yeah, there were, and you know, as with anything, I mean, I unfortunately, I don't speak a little bit of Spanish, but beyond that, there's nothing. So for anybody who can speak more than one language, if you're coming to me and it's broken, I don't care. As long as I can understand you and you can understand me. But yes, they were bilingual. So you
could have your communications back and forth. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have them. So you started the market really with this distributor relationship,
right?
And built from there to hire, and they really advised you on the culture and what to do there.
Yeah. And a lot of it came down to, and this is, you can, there's one of two ways you can sort of do this. I mean, you can go big or you can go really small. And we decided, to go small in terms of, you know, you can sample sizes of one or two or three or four, as opposed to widely canvassing folks to determine ways to go. So we elected to use that sort of sample size of one or two to really guide us, because many of those sales guys, they, you know, like I said, they'd been there for a little bit already. So they knew what customers were looking for. They knew what their competitors were doing in that region. So having an opportunity to, we had a leg up. From my perspective, we had a leg up moving into that market. So,
okay, which is not unusual for companies. They might go and then meet a distributor, and you know, one of the biggest mistakes I hear is hiring the wrong distributor, because breaking that relationship can be hard.
It can.
Oh, you're smiling and laughing at that. So you had issues with that?
No, not me specifically, by no means. But I do. But I am aware of that. You know, at points in the past, there. You know, there's just. Not everybody is going to see eye to eye on everything. And, you know, occasionally, language barriers can play a part into that, play a part of that, as well as cultural differences. So yeah, there I did see a little bit of that, definitely. But there are, I mean, I think the guys that are at SMC are still the people that were there when I left 3 or 4 years ago.
So. Oh, we're still the same salespeople that came on and are there. That's good. So that's been a nice long relationship.
Indeed.
All right. So you had the design and you had the space to do the translation. Who actually did the translation for you?
So that was, we relied on the SMC team. We relied on those distributors, those sales guys. And we had a really amazing contact within SMC that we were talking with regularly. And they found the translation house. For whatever reason, we ran into it's probably language, but it was also probably expectation. We were better served when we went through them to have content translated. Either it would wind up being a little bit more expensive when we did it, or it would not necessarily come back the way that we needed it to come back when we went directly to that to other folks. So.
Really?
Yeah.
So you had a hard time finding a good translation agency to handle the translation.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so when you tried to do it on your own, what did you run into?
I mean, we ran, and this is, honestly, I still run into this a little bit in spots here in the U.S., but folks just not getting back to you, there's that issue, obviously. Prices being higher than you would expect them to be, just given what it is that is being done. The not getting back to you was the stuff that drove me the most nuts, I think. So,
yeah. I'm always surprised to hear that.
Yeah, and I've run into that here stateside as well. I don't understand that part of that sort of part of, I don't know, business necessarily, but yeah, I have experienced that here in the U.S. too.
So you call or email or go online to their company, yep. And they just don't get back to you.
Yep. No. And I mean, I've had that happen. You know, SunTech is not the largest organization by no means, but I've had that happen at, you know, large organizations that I've worked at in the past. And like, I'm one person in one department, but I would imagine lots of organizations would want a foot in the door to some of the places that I've worked at in the past. Not being a braggart by no means, but personally, if someone came to me, my business, and was like, from this X organization, hopefully I can get your business, but everybody else in that building's business. So I am going to respond as quickly as I can. So, and that has not always been my experience.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm kind of speechless here because I'm like, oh, what are the competitors doing or what? And you're just saying reply and give reasonable prices.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, largely. Yeah. And there are for me personally, as I want to work with an organization, whether it's working with an organization through an interpreter, like, you know, at SunTech, what I am looking for is a partner. A vendor is somebody I am looking for a partner. I don't necessarily need you to care about the business as much as I do, you know, day in, day out, but I want somebody that is not just, for lack of a better term, an order taker, that if something comes in and there is an issue that they identify, that they're going to come back and say something to me about that before I see it, if that makes sense. So having a partner, that's sort of where that process starts. If I can't get you to respond to my request or to engage with me, probably not going to come back to you for things.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's it. That's just common decency too.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Calling in with a potential business. Yeah. So you look for a partner, and what else would you look for in an agency?
So a partner, but also So this is a little bit of me, and this is a little bit of the partner, timing. So there are going to be times when there are fire drills, and that's just with everything. And that would be on my side, but that's also going to be on their side. So having a good enough relationship with that partner to be able to say, hey, we've got this coming down the pipe in 2 weeks, or hey, this exploded overnight. Is there any way that you can slip this into the things that you're working on right now? And being able to have a good conversation with an org such that I can make that request, but they can also make the request of, you know, with something that's due tomorrow. Hey, Elliot, look, we've had something pop up. Is there any way that we can push this to Friday or Monday week, as opposed to getting it to you tomorrow? And that's again where the partner comes into play. Yeah, of course, you guys have been not only on time but early for me every other time. If you need to push something one time, I'm more than okay with that. So, and I guess the last thing really is, and this is not necessarily something that I'm, this is not necessarily something that I'm looking for, but I want, you can't call a lawyer when you're in the jail. Like you can, but like, I'm not going through the phone book to find a lawyer. So from a prep perspective, I want to be able to, if I know that this is going to be a need that I'm going to have, I need to be doing that research beforehand to identify a few folks that I can reach out to at the drop of a hat to say, hey, I'm going to send over this quote. Let me know how things are going. And you have a clear idea of when you're going to get the stuff back, reasonably how much it's going to cost, those types of things. Because business moves quickly, and not having your ducks in a row, not having partners sort of there is not good business. So,
okay, so you ran into problems finding a good translation agency to handle it to you. So it was easier to push it off to the distributor, mm-hmm. and they handle it. So you're not even talking quality issues with somebody here. You're just talking purely getting it done.
Correct. And in most of my experience, I have not had any quality issues. There've been a couple of things where, a Brazilian Portuguese translation came back at SunTech, and a specific distributor in that region, it's like, hey, technically this is correct. Is there any way that we can transition that word or that phrase to this specific to my region? Just because it's going to hit differently here than it would, two or three regions over where it is more commonly used.
Right, which is, that's a good translation. You have a review and what's comfortable for the people who are going to be using it. Right. Yeah.
But that side of things haven't had really any, like once I was able to engage with someone and secure work, the work moved quickly. Very minimal. Hey, this is incredibly wrong. Like, I don't know that that ever happened in any of the translations that happened, whether it be at SMC or any of the other places that SunTech did business globally.
So, when you had the distributors doing it, sometimes I'll hear that the distributors actually change the messaging, and you might not know back in the corporate office.
Yeah,
that, run into that or any other problems?
We have run into that, and you can look at it in. You can look at it from the standpoint of they know what their market demands better than probably I do, but there's also. There's also sort of words and phrases and terms that need to be specific, that need to not change. And whether they have been identified beforehand as those words that don't need to change or phrases, as it were, if you're changing, a sentence or two in a brochure, but the meaning is still correct, I'm okay with that. But if there are, again, like those specific core messages that need to be gotten, that people need to really get, I would prefer that stuff not to change. So it's just leeway.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's okay. No, how did we find that information out? I mean, really, it's just it really comes down to over time, you're going to either be talking to people or you're going to find out through the grapevine, or you're just going to be talking to somebody and they'll tell you that, hey, we changed that. And it's up to you at that point to say, hey, no, we need to change this back, or to let, you know, to let that go. But what that speaks to for me really is, and we did not do this initially at SunTech, but having a clear idea of what you want to be conveyed, having a clear sense of, you know, blood pressure is going to be blood pressure measurements can be translated this specific way across this region. You know, the Brilliant Blood Pressure Solutions, which was SunTech Medical's tagline for most of the time that I was there, it needs to be translated this way. That was finding those terms that need to stick. That's vitally important from my standpoint.
Okay, so if somebody's going over to China now and has a distributor because they're just starting their market, just mm-hmm. sending the materials and blindly letting them go for it could get you, you wouldn't do that.
No, personally, I would not. And I would not do that with not only the words, but also the look and feel. We talked about designing things in an open way, and that still applies, but it, from a look and feel perspective, these are the elements that need to stay. These are the elements that we've identified, and you can identify those with a partner to say, these are going to work here, these are not going to work here, and how do we change the ones that aren't going to work here? And the same thing with terms and phrases. Having the opportunity to talk to someone before you translate that stuff and not just, like you said, throw it over the wall blindly at them. You have to have a conversation to do it effectively.
Okay. That's really interesting. So you really did need to have a partner translation agency mm-hmm. that you could lead it off with to do the translation, but then you could manage it down the line.
Yes. Yeah. And that goes back to the partner. I want them to care about the output just as much as I do. That's the goal. That's the goal for me. And caring about that output means, I remember Elliot said he did not want this to be translated into this, that it needs to either stay in its native language or it needs to be translated specifically this way. Because, you know, Cheryl and the account executive at the place, we talked about that, if that makes sense. But yeah, having that partner in country or in region, yeah, that's invaluable. So invaluable.
Right. Okay. Which is what we suggest is have a professional translator do the translation. If it's really important, have an equally qualified editor, mm-hmm. then have an in-company, in-industry, or, you know, distributor review it.
Yep.
And then it goes back to the original translator. So then you make sure you get all the grammar correct and the messaging correct. And if there's particulars they want to add in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you're talking about, an advanced person jumping ahead to how you could do it, but what right. you set up controlled the quality.
Yes. And the framework, the process that you just described, that the process you just described. Yes. I will co-sign that as well.
Okay, well, definitely. It's good to hear that, because at first I thought you were just saying it was more dependable to get it from the distributors.
No.
Just trusted them. But you had a lot of checks and balances on that.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love that's how you are an effective salesperson. You have to have relationships with the people that you're selling with. But there are times when however you can grease that wheel effectively from a sales perspective, I'm going to grease that wheel. And sometimes, to your point where you talked about words changing and things like that, that's where some of those things start to happen. So again, having, whether it's the distributor, you know, they're helping with the translation, but having someone who is providing those checks and balances too is very important.
Wait, so I think you just said something that I frequently hear, and it's so fascinating to hear. Yeah. again, is what you're saying is the distributor is a salesperson. So as a marketing person, if you've taken the time to create the message, the distributor will take your carefully created marketing message and change it to a sales message, which is usually better price, right?
The better price piece of things. Yes, definitely. And that's, I don't have, as a marketer, from a personal viewpoint, all of everything, every input, every output, all of it is marketing from my perspective. So that salesperson that's going to talk to a potential customer or a long-term customer, like, yes, they are a salesperson, but truthfully, they are a marketer for this organization, for this brand, for this product. So that sort of divide, that sales marketing divide, yes, it's there, but it's also, hopefully if done well and everybody is on the same page, those things won't happen, but they do frequently.
I started my career in sales and then I got formal marketing training and there's a difference in your goal, there's a difference in terminology and we need both. It's not just wanting either one. I respect both.
Yeah.
When you can get it to work together, that's when the magic happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, agreed. So
here you are, and you're working, you're launching the China market.
Mm-hmm.
How long till you started working on that and doing translations till you actually went over to China?
And just to clarify, like there were a whole bunch of people involved in that process, not just myself, but just wanted to clarify that. But no, it took, I think I was in, I made the trip to the China Medical Equipment Fair, I believe in 2010. I believe that trade show was in February or April of that year. So that was, we were probably a year to 2 years in, really sort of figuring out how SMC was going to work. So, I was there for about a week, in mostly Hong Kong, but, on either ends of the trip, in China. So spent a couple of days, at SMC and, just to have the opportunity to be face to face with people that I had been talking with through email, through phone for a while was great. It was great, and to see their appreciation for the things that we are doing, but to then be able to give appreciation to them for the things that they're doing in market was a great experience. It was a great experience.
Okay, so I'm sure it's always great when people go over.
Wow.
And it's always challenging.
Yes.
Because the cultures are so different.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about some of the challenges you had.
Let's see. Probably the first one. I cannot remember what market we were in, but there was a point, one of the first or second nights we were there. And I don't know that I have ever been... there had been that many people that were around me. And like, I've been to football stadiums, all that kind of stuff. There were seemingly people for days around me and just in sort of this open market. And it was a little bit overwhelming, honestly, to see that many people in just this one space. And, I am in China. I am not Chinese. I am a black man from North Carolina in the United States. So I am used to, in the circles that I travel in, being, 70, 30, 30 everybody else, 70 white. So that sort of makeup. So to be one of, from what I can see, lots and lots of people, that was overwhelming. But one of the things that
you were the only black person amongst all Chinese.
Yes, right. And but one of the things that of the things that was that I thought was good for my colleagues who were white to experience that as well, and to be able to see a little bit of what I experienced when I'm back in the States, them having the opportunity to experience that I thought was, I think, eye-opening for them. And Yeah, that was eye opening for them. There were moments of laughter for me in terms of, yes, you kind of know how that feels a little
fantastic.
Bit.
Fantastic. Yeah. So you have more of an experience of being a minority in a majority crowd, but here the whites had never experienced that. So what were their biggest surprises?
And for no other reason, just they're not, it's just a general level of not unease, but just, oh, I am so used to being majority. So there is a level of unconscious comfort that is in that. You know what I mean? So when that's sort of stripped away, there is a, I am more cognizant of what I look like and how I am moving in this space. That for me is just kind of sort of every day. Those were some of the experiences I think that that they felt. In addition to that, I think the first day of the show, if I'm at a trade show, not too many people are at trade shows right now, but if I'm at a trade show, my preference is to be at the front of the booth. I want to engage with the people that are walking by, just to talk to people, excuse me. So I'm doing that and I'm in the booth and it's probably 9:05. Show had been open 5 minutes and a mother and a son, maybe 5 years old, were walking by, nobody else on the near our booth. And the kid's walking by and I see him stop and look at me and, wide-eyed, completely wide-eyed, and he points. It happened in slow motion, and his mom realizes that he stopped, looks down at him, and then looks up at me, and just shuffles him out of there as quickly as she can. It's just like, come on, we gotta go. You don't need to be pointing at people. So, but that was that. That's a funny little thing. No, it's just I'm sure my. Any one of my kids at 5 years old probably would have had the same reaction, but yeah. So
with somebody who looks so different while
exactly.
you're over there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And did it feel scary or did you feel like you were more of a novelty?
Probably the latter. Definitely the latter. And it's, I like traveling internationally because there is a level of, you talked about comfort before, there is a level of comfort, state to state, there are differences, but I know how to operate in the US and I am less conscious of how I am moving through spaces. And when I travel internationally, I have to be much more specific about how I move and how my body feels. I don't know if I'm describing that well, but I'm much more, I feel myself in that space, and it's a conscious decision, I think, to experience what is going on around me, because I am in another place that I may not be back in for 5 years or 10 years or ever. So how do I need to move around in that space to enjoy myself, to have fun, to engage and to learn? That's a really, we can, so.
And so what recommendations would you give to people about how to enjoy that? They're going to be very aware that they're different when they're there. They want to engage and learn like you've had the benefit and enjoyment to do. Yeah. What advice would you give?
Yes. If you have the opportunity to experience something, obviously if it's safe and things like that, yes, you're not jumping off anything. But, if you have the opportunity to go to a restaurant, you have an opportunity to experience something new that's specific to that culture, say yes to that. Go. Engage with, again, something you may not have the opportunity to engage with ever again. Those are things that are going to widen your experiences and things that you can bring back here. To wherever you are. And anything that you engage in, I can walk out my front door and have something happen to me that can change, the course of my life. So you don't know when you're saying yes to one of those things that it could be something that I want to do this all the time now. Like I want to, you know, like you never know. So saying yes and experiences like that, I think makes sense. My wife, prior to us meeting, she taught English to kindergartners in South Korea for a year.
Oh.
Yeah. And that was a lot. Like, so she came back and we met and she did not go back. But thankfully, lots of our conversation. Yeah, well, true. Yeah. Lots of our conversations, you know, those first few months were about experiences that she had there. And again, like saying yes to those things that, you know, we will likely go back there at some point, but that was, you know, 15 years ago. So things are going to be different. Those are singular experiences that she had there that she, you know, probably right now won't have the opportunity to replicate. So, yeah.
A lot of people are afraid of doing like the ugly American thing or offending people or mannerisms. Did you ever feel like you were offending anybody?
No. And one of the, no. And really trying to have the opportunity to look at another person and look at them as a person, look at them as a human, someone who can, you know, I don't know all of your language or any of your language. How can we communicate? How can we engage in such a way that there is a mutual level of respect between us? And really leaning on the fact that I don't know your language. And if you're looking at things from a, if you're looking at from a respect, I guess is the word I'm looking for, but I am going to give you more respect and honor you more in that you are helping me. So it's not really an even playing field to a degree. I'm going to honor you more than I'm going to honor what I'm looking to do, just because you're there to help me. And I think that's part of that ugly American stereotype is, you know, I'm coming over to the country and I got my, you know, I know how things are running. No, not really. This is a completely different, it's a completely different country, a different culture. And you have things that you can learn from anybody and everybody that you run across. So coming into situations like that with a learning mindset, I think will quickly destroy that ugly American stereotype.
I love that. I love that. Keeping a learning mindset is what will keep you successful in doing international business.
Yep.
Good. Well, we can't top that. So now we're going to get into some personal questions here.
Sure.
What's been your favorite vacation?
Favorite vacation. Really, it is my wife and I, we go to Williamsburg, Virginia, every 5 years. And it is a thing that as we were dating, you know, and, you know, sort of starting to plan for a wedding, she was, a first or second year teacher. I was in graduate school. It wasn't a lot of money running around, in places. So we're somewhere close, and somewhere, something that we can enjoy together, in Williamsburg and, was it. So there is a, you know, for your listeners, there's a historic site there, but in that city, there's also an amusement park that we enjoyed as kids. So every 5 years, this would have been our, this summer would have been our time to go. Obviously, we did not go. Every 5 years we go. So, and it has been amazing to track the progress of photos from just us to one kid, to two kids, to three kids. And yeah, it's I love that trip with my family. So.
Oh, that's fantastic. And you know, when you say Williamsburg, I get the connotative and the denotative meanings from that word too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. What was your favorite memory of a, or most rewarding cross-cultural experience in work?
So at SunTech, one of the things that we did was every year we would go to a fair, medical equipment fair, a trade show in Dusseldorf in Germany. And when I joined the company, the booth was incredibly small. It was, a foot, 5 by 5, 5 by 10 for lack of a, better phrasing. When I left SunTech 10 years later, it was the size of a house, a small house. So it was a double decker. It was a double decker. It was a wide open footprint. It was beautiful. It was, the team that I had built there at SunTech helped create the look and the feel. So we had just relaunched the brand, and this was just the explosion of it in its physical form, and it was magnificent. But from a international perspective, we worked with the same booth builder from the time it was that big all the way back to when it was that small, and growing with them and growing with, we worked with the same, account rep for all of those 10 years. So growing with them and them seeing us grow and us seeing them grow and age over time and meet them every year at the show I loved it.
Oh, that's great. That is really rewarding because you're sharing that cross-cultural over the years again.
Yes.
Yeah. Favorite place to do business?
I do love Hong Kong. I love Hong Kong. There is sort of that mix of it. It does feel like home a little bit, but there is that level. If I open my eyes and begin to look at things, not from sort of that Americanized view of things, I'm going to begin to see things that I want to dig into and dive into. And I want to go here because that is not something that I would see, in New York or LA or, Raleigh, North Carolina, where I currently am. So yeah, Hong Kong.
You know what? You're really killing me right now because you're getting all my travel bugs going around. I don't know if you heard, there's even now airplanes that are taking flights that go up, go someplace, and then they come back to the same place just because people want to get on a plane and go.
Now, I love, there's always that sort of trepidation of, before the bell rings, like the ding, and that piece. But when I'm in the air, when I'm flying, when I'm looking out, whether it's over open ocean or whether it's over, the ground, there's not a lot like flying. I love it.
Yeah. Mine is after you've landed and you walk into an airport on a country that you're not familiar with, and it's the smells and the sounds and the people and the clothes, like if I could just take that all in, that's one of my favorite times in life.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. And it's, I think there are, if I traveled as much as, some colleagues or folks that I've known in the past, there some of that I might not as enjoy it nearly as much, but I do it just enough for that magic to not go away.
So, right. Yeah. Yes. All right. So we're coming to the end of our time. Do you have any final recommendations for marketers that might be looking expanding internationally?
Talked a little bit about it earlier, but really, I think it comes back to four things, and that is prepping, making sure that you, even if, translation, moving things internationally is far off, you need to go ahead and start trying to at least beginning those conversations, starting to identify people that you can talk to help you with that process. Even if it's those things don't come to fruition, that's just expanding your network. So in addition to that, finding a partner. We talked about that, not just a vendor, but a partner, someone who cares about that work just as much as you do. Allow for timing and allow for hiccups that you are going to have and that they are going to have from a partner perspective. I may need it on Friday. They may not be able to get it to me on Monday. That's not a deal breaker. And if I'm structuring the things that if I'm structuring my deadlines appropriately, Monday will be more than enough time to get that to me. It doesn't have to be Friday. So, and lastly, really working with whether it's distributors, whether it's in-country translators to help create experience for people in those regions, in those countries that make them feel at home, as at home at the content with that content as you feel with that content. So yeah,
that's fantastic advice. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And if people want to find you or reach out to you, where can they find you?
I am on LinkedIn. You can just search for R. Elliot Holloway III, and you'll see my big, bright smile and bald head. So
you do have a bright smile.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, for your listeners, we're doing the recording on a webinar. And so I've been able to see him, and I figured his teeth were so pearly white because he looks at Invisalign.
My oldest is gonna, he has his Invisalign appointment next week. So I'm very interested to see him come back from that. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Elliot. I really appreciate it. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Really appreciate what you're doing here. And because business is not, it's not just next door. It's not just down the road or in your state. If you're doing it well, it can be global. It can be global. It can be big if you're doing it well. And from a marketing perspective, if you are, if you're doing those things that we talked about just a couple of minutes ago, it's going to be a great experience for you. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. And I hope you learned something today or had at least a chuckle. If you did, tell somebody about this podcast. And you can find it on all your favorite places to listen. We'll see you next time.
That's a wrap for this session. A big thanks to you for listening to the Global Marketing Show. Hope you had just as much fun as I did. New sessions launch weekly on all places you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google Play, YouTube, and of course on our website. If you know someone interested in this topic, please tell them about us. Au revoir for now.